You are listening to Embodied People, a podcast co-hosted by Sarah Donahue and myself, Colleen Wall. We are both somatic movement educators and dance professors. We are also faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. In this podcast, we explore all things embodied. We explore anatomy, we explore meaning, metaphor, and how we make sense of out of our lives through our bodies. We also talk about developmental motor patterning, how it affects our psychological and emotional and psychic states as adults. And we really love to offer you movement practices and meditations that deepen your experience of your body so that your body is a generative place for you in your life. That is, it helps guide you towards and supports you in living the life that is most fulfilling for you. This podcast is sponsored by Integrated Movement Studies, and that is a certification program in the Laban-Bartynieff Movement Studies system. And if you'd like more information on Integrated Movement Studies and what the Laban-Bartynieff system is, beyond what we offer in this podcast, you can check out our website, imsmovement.com. Hey, welcome back to Embodied People, a podcast. And today is an extra special episode. This is Colleen, and I am here with Sarah Donahue. And today we are doing the first interview in a series of what we would like to do is a lot of interviews. And our interview today is with Erin Law. Erin is faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. She certified in 2004. Erin also has an MFA in dance from Smith College, a BA with honors from William Smith College, and is a visiting assistant professor at Alfred University right now. Erin is also a licensed massage therapist and has used the Laban-Bartynieff work in a number of innovative, heartfelt, and I guess I'd say really change agent kind of ways. And one of those was their work called "An Unraveling Our Whiteness," which was a somatic approach towards conversations around race and whiteness and privilege and equality. And so it is with that that I want to say, hi, Erin. And is there anything else that I missed in the introduction about who you are in the world?
Hi. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me. I would say, although just with the unraveling work, that it's not just about, you know, being in conversation, but it really was around how I'm using somatic work in a vein that helps us understand how we might actually embody whiteness or these sort of conceptual ideas that can sometimes seem really big. And so it's more of a pragmatic way to drop in and notice and cultivate somatic awareness around those touchy, charged moments.
Yeah, I'm really appreciating your description of that, Erin. It brings up for me, I think that there's a pattern in our world, in our lives, of big, heady conceptual ideas. And what we seek to do with this podcast, with the Laban work, I think is to find ways that what feels like it's floating out there in the ether or in the intellect, that it can come through our tissues and be useful in a way that we can then live our lives differently. We can be in relationship with ourselves and other people differently because we've brought it into our physical knowing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think with that, the first, I'd like to start this conversation today by asking you a question. And the question is about this moment in your life. And it probably has something to do with what's out there. What are some of the big questions out there that you are figuring out how to materialize and channel through the somatic work? But what right now is the spark of your interest in the somatic work? Where's the life for you right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's related to what I just started talking about. I think mainly am interested in how we can use this work to help everyone and anyone who wants to and is ready to come home to their bodies in a way that allows them to cultivate a somatic awareness and knowing. And so that they can use that somatic awareness and knowing in the right and timely place. And because I think sometimes that, I think oftentimes in our culture, that is ignored and or pushed aside, or it gets sensationalized and there's like a buzzword like somatics or embodiment, and the actual practices get lost. And so for me, I think I'm interested in like, how do we connect these huge, heady, swirling concepts to something that we can actually feel and describe, and then be able to integrate into our lives. And I would say the other thing for me is community building. I think that if we are embodied individually, and then we are embodied as a whole community body, then there become a lot more possibilities for what we can do in our culture, what we can accomplish together, and how we navigate through struggle and conflict. I think it opens up this whole other world. And so that's what's alive for me right now is how do we come back to the body in the sort of wake and wreckage of like these old systems that are crumbling down right now, and sort of the aftermath of colonialism and all of those, you know, big ugly things that we are sitting with right now as a culture.
Hey, Erin, I wonder, I wonder just for our listeners, just to kind of like dapple in like a little like mini experience, maybe like when you say coming home to your body, like, is there like a simple thing, like anyone listening right now could just like maybe, you know, close their laptop, step away from the computer, and just like, what could someone do just to like the first simple step to come home to their body?
Yeah, the first step that I like to start with is to be able to take a moment to feel what parts of your body are in contact with something else. So is it the floor or a chair or, you know, your bed or whatever it is. And then if it's possible, seeing if you can soften into that support and that place of contact.
Yeah.
And that's nice. I think it is really nice. I feel different having just been guided through that. I feel more present with where I am, not so running off onto the next. I think that from that, how would you, from that knowing where we are, feeling the contact upon which our body currently is, how would you then describe what somatic knowing is? And if you have an example of an experience in your own life where somatic knowing guided you into a different way of being in relationship or in community with others.
It's funny because the first thing that comes to my mind is last night, Colleen and I were talking in front of a big group of people, and it was an audience who had come to see our students in an end of semester showing. And I noticed in my body, as people were entering into the audience, that I'm really used to talking to my students, and I feel totally grounded doing that. But upon the audience entering, I felt like this little pang of nervousness, and that I was like, oh my gosh, I have to say something that is coherent in front of all these people, and you know, they're not my students. And so I actually did take a moment to take a deep breath and feel my feet on the floor and actually feel the back of my body. And then I could ground into my own tissue, into almost feeling like I was being held by the nothingness that was behind me, as I could then connect much more organically and authentically with the audience. And so, I mean, that's not, you know, an example of where, you know, there's this conflict or anything, but it is something that I noticed and was, I was very conscious of it in the moment.
Sarah, do you have a question?
I was just thinking about the, what you were earlier talking about, you know, kind of looking at this sense of coming home to self, but also how self connects to community, which it can do obviously in like so many ways. And I think a lot of times, like with the work that you've done, you know, and that it's that maybe we're, I feel like I'm oftentimes trying to connect with maybe a group of people who I don't know. I don't, you know, I don't have their lived experience. I don't have maybe a lot of connections to, but I want to connect with somehow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like one thing that's coming to mind right now is as I'm driving around Salt Lake City this winter, seeing like the incredible amount of homeless people who are freezing out on the street. And I feel like empathetic, like pangs and pulls, you know, but it's, that only goes so far, I guess. So, yeah, I don't know if you have some more thoughts about like when you say you're like connecting to self, but also connecting to community and how that can be embodied.
Wow. Yeah, I can relate deeply to that. Before I was here in Alfred, I was in Nashville and in Tennessee, and the rate of people without homes just keeps increasing and increasing and increasing. I actually did a lot of work for a couple of years with an organization working with folks who were on the street. And I remember one day I was driving somewhere and I had to get there. But I saw out of my car window someone who was just deeply struggling. And in that moment, I knew that I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop to help them. And I actually asked myself, what do you have anything from your authentic self that you can offer this person right now? And the answer was no. And I actually talked with my therapist about this. I think I was actually on the way to therapy. and she said, you know, she had a similar feeling towards other people. And she said, I wonder if you, as someone who has, you know, perhaps a bigger heart and has all this empathy, like, is it possible for you to channel that love into something that is accessible in your life? And I think that that connects into how I like to work with somatic and work in a communal setting, which is to encourage people who, you know, in our learning circle to really look at the relationships that they have access to, like where, what is right in front of you that you can affect change in your little tiny corner of the world. Because I think, you know, something we talk a lot about in our system is change in one part can change the whole. And I know that that's true in my own body. Like, as soon as I took my own advice and put my feet on the floor and felt where my feet were connecting and took a deep breath, I feel just by doing that little thing, the whole of me has changed. And now I'm more present. And now I can actually take in information and be maybe not objective, but I can be present. Yeah, I can just be present. And that is more than I think we can say for a lot of folks right now. We're inundated with just constant stimulation from one place to the next. And I think that impairs, along with all of the, you know, lived experience that we have, that impairs our ability to respond in the moment, in a way that is perhaps balanced and thoughtful and caring. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what comes to my mind.
That's great.
One thing that comes up as I'm hearing both Sarah, your question, and Aaron, your response, which is that I sometimes think with the somatic work that we're guiding attention in our bodies, and we're guiding an opening of an energetic life, and we're guiding more specificity. And sometimes I think that that can feel like, okay, so I can feel the bottoms of my feet now, but who cares? Like, why does that matter? What impact does that have on my lived experience? And as I'm hearing you both talk, what's coming up is that this is who cares. This is why it matters. This stuff, when we can feel our feet, when we can come into presence, when we can say, where's my heart in this? Is it soft or hard? How am I feeling what's going on in my inner experience? That it lets me know myself in a way that I get to live a life that's full, that has a full range of expression. Mm-hmm. And so you're sort of giving me the sense of the why it matters, why what we do in as somatic educators and in the Lama Martinia fork, how it then ripples out in that way that changes us. And so the idea of this word resource is coming to me, that the time and the repeated practice that we have put in within our own selves, like practicing our somatic skills within our own lives, that they become resources every moment for how it is that we engage.
Yeah. Can I say something about that?
Please. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that is so important about that is that in that cultivation of awareness, that process where we're cultivating awareness, we also can begin to practice discernment. And so, you know, there are times where I actually don't want, it would not be helpful for me to feel the weight of my body against whatever surface is holding it. For instance, like if I'm driving in, there's a little wreck that's about to happen right in front of me, I don't want to be trying to calm myself down or like sensing into my back body, or like, you know, I need to actually have my focus outward. And later on, after that has happened, perhaps I need to do a little aftercare. Maybe I witnessed, you know, like a little fender bender or got in one myself. And that is like, I think that's the place. It's like, when can this be useful, and when could it actually be harmful? And how do you know the difference? You know, because I think as someone who has spent like most of my life cultivating this particular type of sensitivity, I've had to have some experiences where that's been way too much, like to just stay open all the time, and to learn actually how to create boundaries around that, and like to learn when I need to do what. So I just want to add that, because as you were talking, I think that's an important piece that sometimes gets left out of the conversation.
Yeah, I'm curious about this word boundaries. When you have for yourself created boundaries, or when you think about creating boundaries, what are some of the somatic connections and relationships or inroads that you use for boundary work?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that comes to me in my, as I listen in my body and reflect on some past experiences, is literally having this sense of an energetic bubble around me. And it's a permeable bubble, but it's like this little field that allows me to know that I'm in here and other is out there, but that we are in conversation with one another. And I think that boundary work is something that, again, needs to be, we need to consider with discernment, like, when is the right and timely place? Do I need a really firm boundary right now, which might look like me actually finding the edges of my body and sending some kind of tension or energy there? Maybe that's going to be helpful for a moment. And then I don't want to get stuck in having that boundary up all the time, because it might not always be appropriate in that circumstance. So that's one way, is like this energetic way. And then the other way is like, I'm actually doing this. I'm like pushing my hand against the other hand. And I'm actually feeling like muscularly, like through my muscles, through the push of my muscles, like the edges of my body. And I think, like, having been born a C-section, like, it's really important for me. I think that's why I do contact improvisation, is like, it's really important for me to be able to feel like where is my edge? And then to also feel that that's in contact with something else. And I'm both whole and in relationship with that something else.
Two things come up for me in that also. One is that in the pushing against an edge, I know where I am. It's a similar to feeling where the bottom of the body is, or the places my body is in contact, is that as I push up against something, I feel my sort of proprioceptive sense of where I am in space. And pushing up against something, I feel a response at the core of me, that there's a center. And so what also on a somatic and a movement level is connected to this, is boundaries require an active and enlivened center.
That's that right.
There's something core that's organizing the boundaries around it that allows the push or the holding of an edge or the boundary to have support from the inside of it.
That just reminded me of something that connects back to a question Sarah was asking like a while ago. But you know, it's interesting when we look at, like, if we reflect back on the hellish time of 2020 and into 2021. And there's, you know, there's this slogan that I think a lot of people really latch onto, especially in more like social justice spaces, where they talk about resisting. And everything is about resisting and being in solidarity with someone else, right? Or some other group. And you know, I think they are responding to the fact that perhaps there hasn't been any resistance or enough resistance, and perhaps there's been some spottiness in how people are showing up for each other. And so I think that's where it's coming from. But as I was working with my teacher, Tada Hazumi, one of my teachers, and they talk a lot about that. Like, is it actually useful for us to say resist, 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 resist? When we go to a protest and we're saying resist, what energy does that create in our bodies as we say resist, resist, resist? When we come home from the protest, are we still in that place, right? And what does that do literally to our nervous systems, to the whole of our body, to how we are in the world? If we're always resisting, then you're going to break eventually, right? I mean, that's just, there has to be this dynamic between resistance and perhaps, I don't know if surrendering is a good word, but yielding, softening, right? There has to be this dynamic relationship between those things. And so to me, that feels like a really important thing to name, because I think that we get really, yeah, we latch on to these sort of political ideas, and then we don't always understand how they're actually impacting us at a cellular level. And then that, again, ripples out to the people who are around us.
Yeah, it makes me think of the difference. I mean, it could just be language, but like how we would embody the language between like a boundary that is rigid and a boundary that is still there, but it's permeable, or it has like give to it. It has the ability to change, where
exactly.
I do think sometimes we come into a fight with a sense of like put up the armor and put up the shell, and things become rigid, and then there's not a lot of movement or possibility for change.
Yeah. And I've got two different teachers who have said these really wise things around boundaries. One, the same Tata, and their former colleague Dare, would talk about boundaries as, they actually would not really use that word, but they would talk about boundaries as a dance in time and space. And so how much time do you need? How much space do you need? And then dancing with those things in relationship. And another teacher, Prentice Hemphill, said something to the effect of like, boundaries are the distance at which I can love myself and you really well. And probably misquoting them, but that is, to me, it implies this sense of dynamism. Like there's always movement. There's always movement. There's always this like calibration that's happening.
Yeah. And we'll be a different person tomorrow than we are today. Right. So we have to calibrate differently.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's striking me also is we set it up that in the beginning of this conversation, Aaron, you introduced the big world of concepts that we then funnel and channel into a physical understanding. And I'm noticing in our conversation and in our language, we're then sort of taking language into physical understanding. And from what we know as movement educators, we are then using our understanding, our sensitivity to something physically, to then further understand it, make more sense out of it, have more subtlety and more nuance in terms of how we're discussing these different concepts that we're talking about. And I think that this is the heart of what somatic work really, one of the hearts of it, is that it helps us see how much of our lives are made sense of through our physical bodies, and it gives us movement resources to live life, to be more dynamic in our bodies, which then allow us to have boundaries that can be hard and rigid when we need them to be, or can be soft and tender when we want them to be, because our bodies have learned through moving them and attending to them the adaptability of choice in the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have agency in that process. I think that's part of what somatic education allows us, is that we have agency and choice, and there's a million possibilities if we can drop in to those, into that space. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that's coming to my mind is, so it was so funny because I think I reached out to you initially talking about this idea that just keeps coming to me, and I don't quite know even what it means. And as we're talking, I think I'm getting a better sense of it. And so initially, like, I was really thinking about sort of moving along the lines of movement as metaphor, which I do think we're sort of talking about, and more specifically that I've been thinking about, or just even feeling into, I don't know if I've been thinking rationally, but feeling into this idea that embodiment, we can look at or approach embodiment and our skills in embodiment as a type of technology. And I think that sometimes we think of technology and organic matter as two different things. And I think as we are continuing our evolution through humanity, it's necessary that we grapple with the ways in which we rely on one another and how those things are integrated and in relationship. And so I think when I think of embodiment as technology, it's a resource. It's this word you've been using, Colleen, it's a resource. And technology, really, there are a few different definitions of it, but one is that we're essentially applying knowledge, a body of knowledge, usually that's scientific in some way, to something pragmatic or practical. And like that, to me, that like is what somatics is. It's like taking what we know from sort of Western anatomy and dropping it into our lived experience and sort of seeing what emerges from that. And I think what I'm excited about is that we could consider that our bodies in some ways are the most technologically advanced and like they always have been. And I think the only reason we even like have technology is this desire to expand beyond the edges of what our senses can do and our felt sense can do. So I guess I'll stop there and see if that brings anything up for you all, but I have more to say, but I just wanted to take it there.
I'm so glad we're here. I have a personal story that I want to lead in with this. A couple of years ago, a colleague and I wrote a grant and we got a 360 VR virtual reality 3D video camera. So this camera was shaped like a tuna can and it had lenses all around it. And it was capturing the world 3D in real time. And so I went to his office when we first got it and he had said like, oh, I'm just gonna get it set up so you can see how it works. And so I stood in the doorway of his office while he sat in the chair at his computer and we talked and I didn't think too much of it. And then he was like, hey, come on in. I just recorded our conversation. I want you to see it. So I sat in the chair, which was almost exactly where the camera had been. And I put on this VR headset and I watched the conversation that had just happened 5 minutes before. And it was as though I was standing next to myself or sitting next to myself standing there. And I was three-dimensional. It was as if I could reach out and touch my arm. And so almost just like made me think about the daguerreotypes and the first time people saw pictures of themselves, except I had never, you know, I see Sarah, I see Aaron three-dimensionally. Like I care about them because I really have a tangible understanding of them being real bodies, but mm-hmm. I can feel myself from the inside, but I had never seen myself three-dimensionally in the way that I had seen myself three-dimensionally in this moment. And besides, it's like, wow, I'm really quirky. I had no idea how bizarre I am, which was my first thought. a strange personality. I actually came to care about myself in a way that I care about other people. Like I saw myself as a person that also deserved care and love. And it was profound. I mean,
wow.
For days I was slightly had to reorient my understanding of who I was because of the intimacy of that. And I think I should add that also the time proximity, like it had just happened. And as I sat in that chair with the headset on, I could see Eric doing exactly what Eric had just done 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. So there was no way for me to deny also that this is what I had just done 5 minutes ago. So it was a real, real eye-opening, heart-opening experience. It made some technology made me understand the existence of my three-dimensional body. So I wanted to like offer that. And then I've been thinking about AI, and I don't know much at all about AI. I mean, back in May, I thought ChatGPT was a person that did a great job translating poems about the Laban work from English, from Korean to English. And I was like, wow, this chat person really has it going on. So I can't say I know much about AI, but I have been thinking about what AI can't do. And AI can't seem to have a lived embodied experience. Like AI could make it look like I was dancing, but AI can't experience my body the way that I can.
No.
Mm-hmm. You know, AI can't sort of maybe on some level it does connect to some higher self soul out there, but I don't think it gets to have the experiences that I have to have in order to make sense out of my life.
Yeah. I saw this meme, you know, on some social media platform, and it was, I can't remember what the picture was, but it said, I think that AI should have to wait tables before it can make art. And I think that's kind of maybe a little bit what you're getting at is the grit, and the literal like physicality of our human experience. Is something that AI may not be able to experience the way we do. I do think of it though as something that is inevitable. Like we in our lifetime are going to be at the cusp of the unknown and this newness that people were, like you were giving the example of when they first saw a photograph of themselves. And we're in this very nascent baby, baby, baby phase, where we've got this little toy that we're figuring out how we can play with. And I think what I want to offer is that as people who are embodied, we may have a really important role in how AI comes to be, in that we can navigate the relationship that we have with that thing, and use it for good and keep it, you know, connected into what really matters to us, just like anything else, you know, that has emerged. And so I think that, yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing. And I also do think, you know, in some ways, like Colleen and I, you know, I'll reveal that we went to undergraduate school together a long time ago. And Colleen was actually in my thesis dance project that I did. And that project really was inspired by this essay that I had read by Donna Haraway called The Cyborg Manifesto, where what she was, I think, positing in some ways is that and cyborg meaning that we're organic material mixed with something that is not organic, which in many ways we are cyborgs today. But I think what she was positing is that that actually allows new possibilities for how we express sexuality, gender, new ways of even like conceiving of life could be possible through this way of thinking about our existence. And so I don't know. I think there's something in there that we are already probably more cyborgian than we realize. And also we have this more newer feeling around AI that we have to begin to navigate from our somatic wisdom.
I know very little about AI myself, but it does make me wonder about, like you were saying, Colleen, like what it's perhaps missing is the ability to embody. And I also think with that is that, I don't know, like the ability to self-reflect and change, you know, that I'm thinking of these like technologies, and this might be too much to go into at this point, but I remember, Erin, we had like a integrated movement studies work group at one point that was kind of grappling with, you know, some social racial issues within the program and just needing to talk about that. And I remember you talking about like urgency and like how like that is something that's like present in our whiteness. And there's a lot more to say about that, yeah. I'm sure. But it just makes me wonder, you know, like as, I mean, you can't see us, listeners can't see us right now, but we're three white women, you know, like what, as, you know, like in our embodiment of our whiteness, like what, I don't know, are there like some tools or some technologies where it's like, I could notice like, oh, am I, what sort of force am I entering the room with? Or what sort of like urgency am I attacking something with? Or just what those, that sort of self-reflective thing that, I don't know, maybe that could also be programmed into AI. But for now, yeah. I'm always curious, like, what can I do as myself?
Yeah. So in a way, I actually think AI is a product of whiteness in a good sense. Like, I actually think like we wouldn't have iPhones and stuff like that if we didn't have this sort of like colonial way of thinking, and really like it is innovative, and I'm not trying to defend whiteness as a construct in that way, but it is something that has brought culture about in a certain way, but I think it's also, it's not only technology, but it's also epistemology, which means like how do we know. And I think you all talk about that a lot on this podcast, which is like, how do we know what we know? And our bodies are the things that tell us how we know what we know. And so when I'm talking about urgency, it's a chronic sense of urgency. So it's not like, oh, this sudden thing happens. You know, it's more that there's this expectation to always produce and always be ready to go and always be working and always be producing, doing without the relationship to rest and recuperation that is necessary to keep it in balance. And so I think that somatics is a technology, like if you'll allow me to like go there, that helps us be able to remedy the remnants of like of whiteness or supremacy culture or colonialism or however you want to look at it. And I will also just say that is an indigenous technology. So like I would say like the people whose land had been overtaken like already had that technology, and somatics is a field that allows us to get back in touch with that. And hopefully we do that responsibly, you know, and with some cultural humility.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, just like hearing that and just being aware of it, I think is like a step that a lot of people, you know, can take. And yeah, we're lucky that we get to like live in our bodies through our jobs every day. But just to like notice, yeah, just to notice in your own body, like what your momentum is in the day. And mm-hmm. It makes me think of that bumper sticker Aaron and I saw when we were driving home from teaching, and it said, "Do more." And we were both like, "No."
I remember that. We were like, "No, we've done so much.
Why do we have to do more?" But yeah, just to like check in with that, like how much of the time are you going, or how much of the time are you like just even sitting back in your body and breathing and letting your pores open.
And like, when is the urgency and the goingness really serving you and necessary and very, very necessary to contribute meaningfully to your life? And when is it overtaking you as a sort of like suit that you put on and not something that's actually coming from a real need, a real necessity?
Yeah.
I do want to chime in that there is, I think, a human, maybe not AI, but a human drive to create, to both create and be destructive. And
yes,
to change. There's a human impulse to change, use our bodies to change our world. And sometimes the drive to do that, I think, can be really energized
Right.
And there can thus have an urgency because there's like a pull, a magnet towards it. And I do want to like say that that's a possibility that's mm-hmm. decoupled from being pushed because somebody says you've got to be highly productive. Those are really different places mm-hmm. from which we approach that which we're doing.
Yeah, I hear in that too, this differentiation between like a hierarchical way of organizing versus perhaps like a way where we can share power and know that like maybe in this moment it's your turn to like show up with the energy when you have the energy authentically, but that not everybody can be expected to have that same drive at every given moment. And I think that's in a way what capitalism does expect of us. And I think we're seeing how that is not sustainable and it's not working. And so I'm curious about how our bodies can continue to play a really important role in that.
Yeah, and that I think that it speaks to the rhythms of a person, of a community, mm-hmm. to at times like be driven towards productivity, at times be driven towards rest. Mm-hmm. And rest that doesn't have to then give life to productivity, but rest for its own sake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I see that we are coming towards the end of our time. And I have a question that I think connects technology towards somatics and maybe a seed of what's next. Mm-hmm. We've been talking loosely about some kind of somatic Laban-based integrated movement studies app. And given everything we've talked about, what might you, Aaron, Sarah, think should be or could be included in a way that was generative in this app?
Yeah. I mean, I think the beauty of having an app is that there is sort of content that's available at your fingertips at any moment that you might need it. And so I think there could be many different ways that we could use this technology to help us move towards what's missing. Like we talk about in space harmony, which is a theory inside the Laban work, that we can feel frazzled or stuck or something like that when we keep pushing in the same direction all the time. And I think an app would allow us to have sort of a menu of choices for like, oh, what is it that I actually need right now? And so I would hear, I would imagine like guided sort of somatic meditations or movement practices that would help us get to these very different dynamic qualities or even points in space, depending on where we're stuck.
I love it. Yeah, it makes me think of, I have a like a meditation app on my phone. And like, because we are so attached to our devices most of the time, like it pops up and it's like, oh, time to think about this and time to, just like little snippets of like check in. It makes me think of when I was certifying with IMS, you're really like in it, steeped in it. And so I was like, analyzing my family and like checking everyone out and recognizing that like my mom has this like holding pattern in her breath, in her breathing, that she lots of times will like exhale, inhale, hold, and she'll hold her breath for a little bit and then exhale, inhale, hold. So I went around and I put little like ladybug stickers like all around the house. I was like, anytime you see a ladybug, check in and see like, are you holding your breath? Are you breathing? So in a sense, like, that's obviously the like not technological version of it, but yeah, like in a sense, like something that just a question I ask my students, probably they're probably annoyed by how often I ask it, but it's just like, what does it feel like to do that? Mm-hmm. What does it feel like? But it's interesting how that can be a difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
Like, what does it feel like when you did that movement? What does it feel like when this is happening? And our ability to, like, I don't know if it's like stop and like drop in and like, huh, what did it feel like? So maybe something, maybe that's part of the app.
I mean, and there's already, like, you know, like an Apple Watch or a Fitbit or whatever, you can program it to say, to literally remind you to breathe. And like, stop what you're doing and breathe, like, which I think what they mean is breathe more deeply and breathe in a way that you are aware of. Or it can tell you, hey, you haven't stood very much today, so you should stand up right now. Right. Or, hey, you haven't been moving around very much today in comparison to the rest of the days. And so I don't think our app would do something like that necessarily, but it could serve like as that ladybug sticker as a reminder, like, hey, we could, you know, have you checked in with this part of your moving life today? And I love that question of what did that feel like? Yeah. What does that feel like?
Yeah.
As you're both talking, I was gonna say one thing that occurs to me is I think sometimes I go to my phone when I don't want to feel my body. Like it's an escapist activity when I feel untrusting or like it doesn't feel like good, or I want to actually go to something that's more mental than activity. And I often tell students, hey, did you know you have a body? And so there's like a way that it, maybe we start there, like, whoa, go back to the material, the primary material of your life, and then guiding attention towards something. And then what did that feel like? Or what did paying attention to that bring me in my feeling full self?
Yeah. And I think it could be a bridge between the escapism, which I actually think is a necessary part of our contemporary life, is to use technology in that way. I mean, hopefully we can do that with some moderation or like awareness. But like sometimes I might be scrolling, you know, on Instagram or something, and I'll come across a post that's like, stop scrolling. And I'm like, oh yeah, oh, that's an option. And so I stop. Like sometimes I just, I'm like, oh yeah. And I'll just close it. And so it's like one of those things that, you know, our little app could pop in and say, hey, is it time for you to check in with your body? What's your question? Do you have a body? Is it that?
Do you know you have a pelvis? You can go through each of the body parts and
yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful place to end it for today. Erin, thank you so much for being here. And thank you for the work that you do to remind us that we have bodies and to care for ourselves and each other and the others that we don't know.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really sweet to be with you too. I love you both. And it's fun to have our geekiness, you know, displayed for the world to hear, whoever wants to hear it.
I love it. I feel like this is part one. We're going to have to do part two.
Okay. I'm down here. So anytime you want to do part two, we can do that.
Thanks, Erin.
Thank you.